We'd had some successes with harm reduction, particularly in reducing vehicle accidents, and that approach has been very effective in sending the message that you don't drive a car if you've been using alcohol or drugs these days comes into it as well. So that message has taken hold, and people were seeing less deaths and injuries in cars, and so there was a sense by which the policy has been successful. But what we then saw was young people saying, well, I'm not getting into a car so I can get as drunk as I like, and I can use drugs because I'm not causing any harm. But we then were looking at the research coming out of the US, which was suggesting that there are brain impacts if they're drinking at a young age, and because your brain is more vulnerable to be adversely affected. And also educational impacts that you're related, I suppose. And also we've noticed that there was increasing violence going on. So there was many aspects that were becoming unpleasant about growing up in Australia, and alcohol is at the centre of it all. This sort of very heavy use is increasing. So I got interested in asking questions of, well, how do we compare to other places? And at the same time, we had formed a collaboration with colleagues at the University of Washington, and it was different. The more we looked at the United States policies, they've taken the zero tolerance or just say no approach through the 80s. And what it meant was that their students were told, well, abstinence is the only option. You don't use alcohol or drugs. And you just say no. And zero tolerance also meant that if you were caught using, that it would immediately be a police matter. And so they've tied up they've taken almost the reverse position. And we had hypotheses for that study as to what might be some of the differences we're likely to find. So we had predicted that we would find more alcohol use in Australia than in the US, but less, that there'd be more who used in moderate ways. But we haven't really been finding that in all the analyses we've done. We've really been finding that the higher levels of use in Australia seem to be also associated with high levels of harms for the most part where we can measure them. So it's led us to be more cautious now about the idea that kids can use alcohol through the secondary school period, and we've become increasingly of the view that the American policy might be right with the idea of delaying the age that you start using. And so we've had an effect in Australia in that in 2009 the national health guidelines were changed, so that they were previously saying that moderate use we're aiming for. So the idea that message was being sent home, and many parents had tried to supervise their children to encourage them to use alcohol moderately. So in 2009 the revision of those guidelines said no, really the position for adolescents should be no use till the legal age. That's the preferred position. One thing we've discovered now as we've studied the differences between Australia and the United States more is that the zero tolerance approach actually has some unforeseen perhaps consequences, maybe that's the way to put it. So it has one consequence is that if you have young people being taken to the police if they've been found in school to use alcohol or tobacco, which they do in Washington State, then it actually ends up that has the effect of increasing their alienation from society, if you want to put it in those terms, and their rebelliousness, and it's not a helpful thing to do. So we think the Australian policy of turning a blind eye to some of the behaviour is a better one, that the adolescents are adolescents, they're going to rebel and they'll do things, they'll breach the laws, partly to test the limits, and it doesn't mean they're criminals and you shouldn't sort of treat them as such. So we're looking now at that idea that there's a balance policy might be where we're able to advise on. So the balance policy position would include messages that would be a bit firmer from parents about, it's just a different set of advice from parents, and we're advising parents not to try supervising adolescent alcohol use during the period where it's not the minimum legal age, but to say that they'll do that later. What we think that'll cause is there will be some alcohol use behind parents' backs, But that's been going on anyway, so that won't be a big difference. But the difference is, I think young people probably will be reluctant to come home really drunk, and they're more likely to think that they've done their rebellion by having a few drinks behind their parents' back. At the moment, what we're finding is the rebellious kids are, they're almost coming home, you know, totally alcohol poisoned, and to get a reaction from their parents saying, well, that wasn't what we'd agreed on. So we think we've, at the moment, we've got huge rates of hospitalisation, we've got increasing numbers of acquired injuries, from acquired brain injuries from alcohol that have been all escalating in the youth population. So I think that this new policy will bring that down, but we don't want to see young people going to prison. We don't think it's a police matter. We think that this can all be achieved with warnings and maybe small fines and these sort of things, but certainly there's no need to have... the zero tolerance position is not something that we'd want to emulate. So the policy at the moment that you don't drink until you're 18 is having the effect. We're noticing each year that there's more and more young people that don't drink at sort of 12, 13, 15. So I guess that the view is that most people are good citizens and wish to protect their health, and they're interested in what the current standards are for good health advice. So that's not to be underestimated. So that's an educational role, and you can either put more investment in that and get more effect, or you can, you know, just allow people to try and find the information. But I think putting more investment in education is helpful. And then the in terms of the way you enforce and the way you legislate, I think if there's a relationship between those things, that's where you start to get, as you said, the sort of sweet spot where things are starting to have synergy and working together. So I think what you need is some... often what you have is an enforcement problem. If the first thing, the only thing that the police can do is really heavy-handed, they won't do anything because they know it gets too complicated. But if they could give out sort of some warnings or small fines or whatever, even in health information, the police would love to do that, that I talk to, but they're not empowered to do that at the moment. So those sort of roles can be very attractive to some members of the police. But so you need those on the books.